At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking our photographs out of the camera roll, so to speak, and into the digital darkroom.
Mm-hmm.
We're really zooming in on two processes that I think often get dismissed as just, you know, cleanup, cropping and straightening.
Right, basics.
Exactly. But our sources today argue they're actually fundamental, really powerful acts of composition.
Yeah, absolutely.
For too long, I think many of us have approached these tools as just corrective measures, like, oh, I messed up the shot, so I have to fix it.
We've all been there.
But the reality, according to all the material we've looked at, is that mastering these so-called basics is essential. It's key for transforming a good capture into something truly compelling, something that looks professional.
That's really the core idea, isn't it? That shift in perspective.
Yeah.
The sort of counterintuitive thing here is that thoughtful cropping isn't just about removing stuff. It's actually editing the narrative of the image.
Editing the narrative. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, sure, capturing that perfect composition in camera, that's always the goal, the ideal.
Of course.
But the practical truth for most photographers, most of the time, is that the final, most impactful version of an image often comes together in post-processing through intention.
So cropping becomes a creative tool then.
Exactly. It lets you redesign your composition, shift the focus after the shutter's closed. It's almost like a second chance at composition.
Okay, so our mission today is to unpack that philosophy. We want to go beyond just, you know, the keyboard shortcuts and explore how these techniques really guide the viewer's eye, how they enhance the subject, and even how they can sort of manipulate the emotional feel of a photo.
Sounds good.
Let's kick things off with what feels like the biggest piece. The power of strategic cropping.
Right. And it's fascinating because, like we said, you get this second bite at the compositional apple.
Yeah.
When you crop strategically, you gain this enormous amount of control over how the image is finally presented. You're not just crimping the edges. Mm. You're potentially altering the mood, the visual flow, the entire impact. You're guiding the viewer's eye exactly where you want it to land.
I often hear people say, though, maybe photographers say, that relying on cropping is kind of admitting defeat, that it makes you a lazy shooter. Is there any truth to that?
Well, it's a common misconception, I think. You should definitely strive for the best composition in camera. No question.
Sure.
But cropping is often just a practical necessity. Think about dynamic situations like street photography or wildlife.
Right. Things move fast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you capture that perfect, decisive moment, but you had to use a slightly wider lens than was maybe ideal, just to make sure you got the shot at all.
Okay.
So you have like 95% of a great image, but maybe there's a distracting, I don't know, trash can or the edge of someone walking by in the corner.
And that's where the crop tool comes in, almost like a scalpel.
Precisely. Its primary job is to eliminate that visual distraction, to strengthen the main subject. If an element doesn't actively add value to the story or the aesthetic, if it's just noise.
Get rid of it.
It really should go.
Mm-hmm.
And tightening the composition, cropping in closer, it changes the relationship between the viewer and the subject. It can make a wide sort of observational scene feel much more immediate, more intimate.
And crucially, this is our second chance, as you said, to maybe nail those classic rules of composition. Say you were rushing and your subject is just a bit too centered.
Oh, that's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Take the rule of thirds, right? That fundamental idea where key elements ideally sit along those imaginary lines dividing the frame.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you missed that sweet spot by just an inch because things were happening quickly.
Mm.
Cropping lets you nudge that composition.
Mm.
You slide it until that key focal point, maybe the subject's eye or a horizon line, just clicks onto one of those power points.
And instantly it feels more balanced, more dynamic.
Yeah, more visually comfortable, often.
And it's not just about where the subject sits, right? It's about the structure, too. Can cropping actually enhance the lines within the frame?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Leading lines are so important, they physically pull the viewer's eye into the scene. Maybe you have a great road or a fence line leading towards your subject, but there's, I don't know, some messy foliage cluttering the edges near the start of the line.
Okay.
A careful, slightly tighter crop can just eliminate that peripheral distraction.
Yeah.
It lets those existing lines, diagonals, curves, whatever, become much stronger, more prominent, and way more effective at directing the eye where you want it to go.
Okay, this is where, for me, it gets really interesting. The psychology of aspect ratios.
Ah, yes.
Because when we choose a crop, we're choosing more than just a shape to fit, say, Instagram. We're choosing a mood.
We absolutely are. Mm-hmm. And it's something that often doesn't get enough attention. Different aspect ratios, you know, the relationship between the width and the height, they genuinely generate different emotional responses in the viewer.
Really?
Yeah. Understanding these effects lets you pick a crop that actually reinforces the message or the feeling you're trying to convey.
Okay, let's break that down. What about the extremes? What feeling does a square crop give off?
The square crop, the 1.1 ratio, it creates this immediate sense of stability, balance, containment even.
Containment, interesting.
Yeah, it feels quite timeless, very classic. It works brilliantly for portraits or for symmetrical compositions, things with reflections maybe, because everything feels centered and deliberate, controlled. It kind of forces the viewer to focus inward on the main subject rather than looking around the environment.
Okay, contrast that with, say, a wide panoramic crop.
Totally different feeling. That ratio, maybe a 16.9 or even wider, like a 2.35.1 cinema look, it immediately emphasizes vastness, scale. The environment becomes a huge part of the story.
Right.
It's the go-to for those big epic landscapes or maybe sweeping architectural shots where the context is just as important as any single element. It tends to make the viewer feel small, emphasizing the sheer scope of what they're seeing.
So if you had that same landscape and you forced it into a vertical crop, say a 4.5 for social media,
you'd completely change the feeling. You lose that sense of breadth, that horizontal sweep. Instead, you create an eye path that naturally moves up and down, suggesting height, maybe grandeur, depending on the subject.
So let's make this practical for someone listening. If you photograph a person and you want to emphasize their stature, their presence,
you might choose a tighter vertical crop. It fills the frame, makes them dominant.
But if you want to show that same person as maybe a small part of a larger, complex world,
then you'd go wide, horizontal. Show the environment swallowing them up almost. The ratio literally helps dictate the narrative priority.
It's all about intention then.
Exactly. You choose the aspect ratio that reinforces the feeling you want, not just the one that's the default setting or happens to fit the platform best. You have to think about the shape before you even hit the crop tool.
Okay, we've established that the shape of the frame matters immensely, but that shape relies on a certain stability, doesn't it?
It usually does, yes.
Let's shift gears and talk about straightening. Because honestly, nothing screams amateur photo quite like a wonky horizon line.
Ugh, yes. That subtle tilt is just a massive, immediate distraction for the viewer.
Why is that psychologically?
Well, it's fundamental, really. Our brains rely on horizontal and vertical lines to make sense of the world, to feel grounded. When key horizontal lines to the sea, the horizon, even a tabletop in a still life appear slanted, even slightly.
It feels off.
It creates this unsettling feeling, almost like you're off balance yourself, like walking on a boat deck that's rolling slightly. And that tiny sense of unease pulls your attention straight away from the subject and focuses it on the technical flaw. It breaks the illusion.
And this need for straight lines, it isn't just horizons, is it? It applies just as much to verticals, especially with buildings or trees.
Absolutely critical. We are just as attuned to verticals. When you're shooting architecture or trees or even just framing a person standing up, those vertical lines need to feel truly vertical. Unless you are deliberately going for a dynamic, maybe disorienting effect, which we can talk about. But otherwise, yeah, straighten those verticals and horizontals until they feel physically stable and correct. Otherwise, the whole image just feels wonky.
Okay, but let's talk about the cost. There's a technical price to pay for fixing a bad angle after the fact, isn't there? When we rotate an image to straighten it,
you inevitably lose pixels. Yes, this is really crucial for listeners to understand.
How does that happen?
Any rotation means the corners of your original image area will move outside the boundary of a neat rectangular frame. So the editing software automatically crops the image back to a rectangle after rotation, which means those pixels along the edges, the ones that got rotated out, they're just gone, sacrificed.
So if you have a really crooked shot, maybe off by 5 degrees.
You could lose a surprisingly significant chunk of your image area, especially around the corners. And that often makes any existing compositional problems even worse because you have less room to maneuver.
How bad can this pixel loss get? Like, when does fixing a tilt actually start to ruin the image quality?
It's most damaging when you don't have a lot of resolution to begin with, or when your main subject is already framed really tightly right up against the edge.
Right, no wiggle room.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you shot with a high-resolution camera, you obviously have more pixels to play with, more breathing room, which leads to the best mitigation technique.
Which is?
Leave extra space.
Yeah.
Always try to shoot just a little bit wider than you think you need, maybe leaving 5 or 10% of air around your subject during capture.
That's your safety net.
It's your insurance policy. It means you won't have to choose between having a crooked horizon or, say, chopping off your subject's feet, or an important background element when you need to correct that tilt later.
I remember shooting a big event scene once and realized after that the whole thing was tilted by maybe 2 degrees. Trying to fix it meant I lost crucial details on the edges. You only make that mistake once.
Exactly. And the simplest fix, really, is prevention. Use the tools you have while shooting.
Like the level display.
Yeah, use your camera's electronic level. Or turn on the grid overlays in your viewfinder or on your screen. Get it straight in the camera. And you minimize the need for potentially destructive rotation later.
Okay, that brings us neatly into tools and techniques in the software itself. We need more than just that basic rectangle crop tool, right? We need visual aids.
We really do. Good editing software offers much more sophisticated options. Look for tools that provide overlay guides.
We mentioned the rule of thirds grid.
Yes, but also look for things like the golden ratio spiral or golden triangle guides or various diagonal guides. These overlays let you visualize and test out different compositional structures without just guessing. It helps you make a much more informed, aesthetically sound decision about where to place that crop.
And thinking about where the image will end up seems critical now, especially with social media platforms having their own preferred shapes.
Oh, absolutely mandatory. The final output destination dictates so much. Most decent software lets you constrain the aspect ratio as you crop.
So you can set it to 4.5 for Instagram.
Exactly. Or 16.9 for a video thumbnail or widescreen display or traditional print ratios like 8-point cigar or 5.7. If you know your final image needs to be, say, a 4.5 vertical for Instagram, cropping to that specific ratio early on ensures you're composing within that shape and maximizing your resolution for that specific output. No nasty surprises later.
Okay, this leads to the big creative question. We've hammered home the importance of straight lines and following rules like the rule of thirds, but rules are made to be broken, aren't they?
They are indeed, but carefully.
So when is it okay to have a tilted frame? When is it okay to ignore the guides?
This is where intentionality is everything. It's what separates a deliberate artistic choice from just a sloppy mistake.
Right.
Rules are absolutely meant to be understood so you can break them effectively. Sometimes a slight deliberate tilt, maybe just a few degrees, can inject a bit of energy or movement into a scene that might otherwise feel too static. It can suggest dynamism or maybe a little instability.
What about those really extreme tilts you sometimes see?
You mean the Dutch angle. That's the classic example. The camera is tilted drastically, maybe 20, 30, 45 degrees. That's not an accident. That's a very conscious, creative decision.
And what's the purpose?
It's specifically designed to create dramatic tension, unease, psychological disorientation for the viewer. It immediately signals that something isn't right, that the world is off kilter. If you're shooting something suspenseful or maybe trying to convey a character's disturbed state of mind, that intentional dramatic angle is a powerful narrative tool.
So the key takeaway for the listener here is the difference between that accidental, slightly annoying 2-degree tilt on the ocean horizon,
which just looks like a mistake,
versus a deliberate high impact 20-degree tilt on your subject to create tension or visual interest.
That clarity of purpose is absolutely everything. Break the rules, yes, but break them with clear intent. If you can't articulate why you tilted the frame, you should probably just straighten it.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what does this all mean for the listener? We've gone through composition, psychology, some technical pitfalls, creative rule breaking. These tools, cropping and straightening, they might live in the basic section of our software.
But their impact is truly monumental.
Yeah, monumental feels like the right word.
How so?
Mastering cropping and straightening might honestly be the single fastest way to elevate your photographic eye and the quality of your final images. These fundamental post-processing skills don't just rescue the occasional poorly composed shot.
No.
They actively enhance compositions that are already strong. They help you refine your critical judgment about what belongs in the frame and what doesn't. They ensure every single element is serving your intended story or feeling. You know, great photography often happens just as much in the editing suite as it does behind the camera lens.
So the final thought is perhaps to embrace these tools less as corrective chores and more as genuine creative opportunities.
Absolutely. Think of them as part of the artistic process, not just fixing errors. Maybe take a look through your photo archives today. pull up some older images. Ask yourself, what different stories could these pictures be telling right now? If you stopped treating the crop tool like, I don't know, emergency scissors, and started treating it more like a cinematographer carefully framing their next shot, what new life could you breathe into them?
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.